The title of our paper, our talk, is Read It Twice, a Mass Storage-Based Talk-To Attack, Time of Check to Time of Use. And we'll just start with what this talk is actually about. So basically, it's about compromising consumer electronic devices via emulated USB mass storage. So what you basically want to do is compromise either your own consumer electronic device or someone else's and eventually get some sort of shell on your device, hopefully a root shell. So let's first look at our contribution to distinguish this a little bit. So we have here a working mass storage-based time of check to time of use talk-to attack, which we called Read It Twice. And basically, the mass storage device is able to change its content between check and install or execute phases. So, and all of this while it's being connected to the host, obviously. So another point we had to deal with was the circumvention of block and file system caches. I'll come to this later. Then also we developed a method and a tool for black box file access analysis to external mass storage devices. So you can actually see what some black box is doing on the mass storage device, even though you don't have any access to that device. And this maps block accesses to file accesses at runtime, so you can see what it's doing. And finally, which is going to be the main part of this talk, just to illustrate what we did, is a proof of concept against the Samsung television using our Read It Twice attack analysis and attack tool. So as I said, I will focus on this proof of concept just to illustrate the concept. It's much easier to understand and follow, and hopefully more fun than some abstract general concept. So let's start right in what some modern consumer electronics device that you will have at your home could be a TV set. And these modern TV sets have a lot of interfaces, a lot of stuff they can do. They have USB interfaces for mass storage, so you can watch your movies from them. You can install apps on your TV. You can upgrade the firmware. All of that you can do via connected USB storage. They also have this common interface plus slot for pay TV. They have network and internet connection, and also some privacy relevant stuff. They have sometimes integrated cameras and microphones, so you don't want that device to be fooling around in your house. So what we looked at was the app installation process. Even though the other parts would offer some interesting attack vectors too. So we focused on the app installation part to get that, to compromise this consumer electronic device. So basically, we have a conflict of interest here, because there wouldn't be a problem in giving you access to your own TV in general. From a user perspective, this would be very nice, because you could enable some missing features that the vendor didn't think of. You could fix some bugs that the vendor won't fix for you, because he's just not interested, or it's end of life or whatever. And you could customize your own product, and for those really evil people, they could record pay TV maybe, but just maybe. So from a vendor perspective, this looks differently, because the vendor wants to protect his own intellectual property. He does not want you to fool around on the TV, because you might brick it, and then you're going to go to your vendor and say, hey, I'm sorry, this doesn't work anymore. I want a new one. So it's hard for the vendor to really know what's been happening. So he wants to avoid warranty issues too. Then maybe he has to adhere to specifications or regulations, and he doesn't want you to fool around on your TV. And last but not least, he probably has some deals with content providers to get some certification. So if you're able to grab that pay TV stream from directly from your TV, he might lose that certification. So all of these points from a vendor perspective lead to lockdown devices where the user does not have any access to his, well, inner workings of the device. This access is simply disabled. So what we wanted to do is re-enable this access and using our, using this TV as a proof of concept for attack. So if you look at the content library or application launcher, you have different categories here for applications. You have a gallery, you have cooking, games, children, wellness. So we looked at what's the difference between them. Is there a difference? So all of these applications, which we want to attack, are defined by a meta information file called clmeta.dat. It's just a simple XML file, but it contains the application category. And the interesting thing is it's evaluated at install time, and then it's evaluated again during load time. Each time the application is loaded, this clmeta.dat file is parsed and checked to see what kind of application we have here. The interesting point is we have basically two types of applications. One of them are unprivileged applications, which belong to the category wellness or fitness or whatever, children and so on. And they're Macromedia Flash-based, and you don't need a signature to install them. So this could be an attack vector too. I mean, if you are able to compromise the Flash player that's running on these devices, go for it. We took the easier part, well, not easier part, but the more promising part. There are privileged apps which belong to the category game. That's the only category that defines or indicates shared objects with native code that are run as root. So ideally for us, these would be really nice, but the drawback is they require a valid signature. So if you don't have a valid signature for these, you're not going to be able to install these. But once they're installed, they will not need the signature during runtime. So this is a check for installation only, but not at runtime. So that's the interesting point. It's evaluated at install time and evaluated at load time, the clmeta.dat, but the signature is only needed at installation time. So how does that help us? This is a quick look at the clmeta.dat file just for you to see. There's no magic, it's just we have a category here that says wellness. This indicates an unprivileged Flash app. And on the other hand, we have a privileged app which is indicated by the game category. But apart from that, they're the same. So this little difference indicates this is native code or it's just a Macromedia Flash app. So let's have a look at the app installation phase. We have two apps on our USB medium. Each app has its own directory, so we chose an app which is called talk2, which is in its talk2 directory. We chose an app that's called cache. It's in its cache directory. And each of these apps has at least these three files. So you have this meta information file, you have an icon for the app, and you have the actual code. So when the TV checks these folders for the applications, it will first scan for the clmeta.dat files and look if there are, what kind of apps there are. then it will display all these apps and allow you to install them if they're unprivileged or if they have a valid signature, which we obviously don't have. So what we have to do is we will offer unprivileged apps to the TV, so we will be able to install them. The TV displays them, and we can choose one of these apps to be installed. So if we choose the Talk To app, the TV will then copy the entire application folder to its internal flash memory. Okay, so this is the critical point because this includes all the files that are in the application directory. So if this is an unprivileged application, the TV will allow us to install this application on the TV, and for installation, it will just copy the entire folder, including the clmeta.dat file again. So if we are able to change the content of the clmeta.dat file before it is being copied to the TV from the wellness category to the game category, that is from the unprivileged to the privileged category, then we will end up with a privileged application on the TV. Okay, so what requirements do we have for our time of check to time of use attack? We need a USB mass storage device, obviously, that will host our applications, our files. And the critical point here is that it needs to be able to change its content while it's connected. So we can present during the check phase, we can present a nice image, unprivileged image, and during install or execution time, we can change this content dynamically to be our malware or a privileged application code. So for this, the USB mass storage device that we're using needs a client or on-the-go USB port to which is connected to the host then. And we need some sort of content change triggering by file accesses. So we say, okay, the first time this file is read, give it the good image, give it the unprivileged image, and after that, switch to the privileged image, and then the privileged code will be loaded. So we chose this Gumsticks developer board running Linux mainly because it has a USB on-the-go port, which can be configured as a client port. And luckily, Linux has already, its USB stack offers mass storage emulation for our attack via the Gadget API. So we needed to modify this and to add block and file system access tracking. We did that for FAT16 and 32. It could be extended for other file systems as well. Just these are quite, well, they're quite easy to parse in that way, and almost, well, I'd say most of the embedded devices or consumer electronics will accept these file systems on plugged-in USB mass storage. And we need to add, as another modification, the ability to switch file systems based on file access counters. So this is what the tool output looks like for an unprivileged app installation. Okay, without the colors, but basically like that. So this is the output you get when you connect our emulated mass storage to the consumer electronics device, well, to this TV. And as you can clearly see, you see all that I explained before, that it's scanning the directories, the talk to directory for a clmeta.dat, then it's scanning the cache directory for a clmeta.dat. Those are the two folders that the TV finds on our mass storage device. It evaluates those. And then in a second step, when it will display those applications by reading their icons, this cache bitmap and talk to bitmap file. so it will display them. And finally, when the user chooses one of these applications, it will copy the entire folder to the flash memory, which you see here. And you would expect here, actually, that there are two more files that are being copied. So only the binary file is being copied here, but the talk to bitmap file and the CL metadata file isn't copied from the mass storage again. So this is a problem, as we want to change the CL metadata file before it's being copied, but after it's being checked. So for our time of check to time of use attack, we'd have a problem here. It would fail because this file, the talk2cl metadata, is only read once here, but not a second time when it's being installed. So what's happening here is what I said at the beginning. The block cache kicks in. This is a problem because the TV's operating system caches all block accesses to the mass storage in its unused RAM. So as these two files are already in the block cache, they are not going to be read a second time from our emulated mass storage device. So we cannot change it. So what do we do? Well, we need to kick out our CL metadata from the block cache before it's being read again, before the TV wants to read it again. So what we do is we force the TV to read a large file between checking and before copying the CL metadata file. Because if it reads a large file in between, our CL metadata will be replaced in the block cache. So when it's read again, it will have to be read again from the mass storage device, which we control, so we can change it. So let's see what files we have that we could use for kicking the CL metadata file out of the cache. And obviously, this is the CL metadata from our talk2 application. So every file that is read after that and before the directory is copied would serve as a candidate file. So we could use the CL metadata file from the cache directory, as we don't need that. Or we just could increase the size of the cache bitmap image or the talk2 bitmap image. We could use either of those. We could even use our own binary, but all of this is kind of nasty because then this is going to be copied to the TV and we don't want that. Whereas this CL metadata file is just read to display that there's a second app. So the TV will just read it once, display it, and say, okay, we have a cache application here too. So this file is ideal for us because we can just increase its size and we won't, and this happens here. So when the TV first reads the CL metadata, our CL metadata, it checks, sees it's unprivileged, then it will read this one, which we will make really large. This will kick out our first CL metadata from the block cache. And then later on, when it's read again here to install the application, it will come again from the emulated mass storage device. So this is the output of our successful attack. As you can see, we increased the size of our the CL metadata from the cache directory we don't need to approximately 270 megabytes. So it kicks out everything from the block cache that was in there before, including our CL metadata from our talk2 application. And this leads to the talk2 bitmap, the talk2 SO application, and the CL metadata from that talk2 directory to be copied. So now we achieved our goal. We presented a benign CL metadata was indicating an unprivileged app. And then when it's being installed, we changed it to indicate native code. And we were able, because we could kick out we could remove the CL metadata from the block cache, and we were able to change the content while it was being connected. So what we get is a nice talk to app on our TV, which is native code. And to summarize our proof of concept, we execute our own native code on the TV by presenting an unprivileged app to the TV, elevating its privileges between the check and the install phase. Then we can execute our app with full privileges, that is, as a root user, start, for example, a telnet daemon, disable signature checking for firmware upgrades, and modify the firmware and upgrade a new firmware. So countermeasures for this, an easy countermeasure would be to have the TV copy the app beforehand to trusted internal storage, for example, the RAM or flash also, and then check and install, because then we wouldn't be able to modify it anymore because it's not on our emulated mass storage. This requires a sufficient amount of free memory, obviously, which shouldn't be a problem in this case because it's just a small app. And it might not be available on low-cost embedded devices because they typically don't have so much free memory. Then future work would be to analyze further consumer electronic devices, its app installation code or firmware upgrade processes, and also check to see if this works with, or in practice, if this works with SD cards or hard disks. In theory, it does, but we'd have to see if it's practical. And that's where it ends.